Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Three of us in studio. I'm Alex White here with Nye Zaragoza and Justin Watkins from Battleborn Injury Lawyers. A lot to talk about today. We've got plenty of sports going on and a lot going on in Las Vegas specifically. First off, how are you both doing, Nye?
Hey there. Doing great. Fabulous. How are you?
Good, as always. And I always look forward to Wednesdays when I'm doing Cofield and Company because, Justin, you bring a lot to the table, not only from an attorney standpoint, but also in just in the sports world in general.
Yeah, no, I'm doing as good as I can. I think the last week I told you guys I was going up to Reno for the Oregon State-Nevada game. Nevada pulled that win out. Oregon State did not play well. And then the Golden Knights lost last night. So we're but 6-7 on my college picks last week. So I know we're going to get to some college picks this week, so I'm excited. I got four I like.
Six and one is a very good week for anybody.
Yes, I'll take it.
Yes, so good job there. So wait, Oregon State, Nevada, who were you rooting for?
I went to Oregon State.
You went to Oregon State. Okay, yep. So now we've got UNLV going to Oregon State. We'll have to get to that as well, see how you're feeling about that one. But let's talk about some news for the Vegas fans. Don't lose hope now. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Tom Brady, officially a part owner for the Las Vegas Raiders. So I want to ask both of you, not at a immediate impact, but long term, how much do you think Tom Brady can make a difference here for the Raiders?
Well, the first thing that I have to tell myself is, first, a moment of silence. Because this gives Raider fans some type of hope, right? You are, it's a potential Hall of Famer, Tom Brady, who has an amazing resume, who is coming into this organization and still has belief in the organization and the team, although everything that the team is going through this season and the past seasons to come. The words that he used was embody resilience, relentless, and a pursuit of excellence. And although the Raiders are having a tough time at the moment, I do believe that this team embodies that. So to have him, and not only him, Seymour also coming in as well and is minority owner as well. I believe they both get a 5% stake. It's awesome. It's great. It's a good feeling. I'm not going to lie.
I don't know, man. I think I'll be the unbiased non-Raider fan.
Hey, I took my emotion out of it, technically.
What's that?
I took my emotion out of it, technically.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so. But I'll say this. Is there hope? It all depends on what type of voice they're allowed to have and what impact it will have on Mark Davis. I mean, I think I'm on record saying this isn't, in my opinion, a well-run organization, that it will continually mire in mediocrity based on the moves they've made. And now if you get, you know, a couple new voices in the room who have played the game but have not managed the game, there's a big difference there. It can't hurt, I guess, is from one perspective, is it can't hurt. It'll be interesting to see as somebody who, you know, wants the city of Las Vegas to prosper, but am not a Raiders fan, it seems really obvious on just some simple things they need to do this year. They need to see if there is value in trading Max Crosby.
Not going
to
happen.
The most Raider thing to do is to not trade Max Crosby and continue to win 6 or 7 games so you don't get the top draft picks. You stay in the, you know, low single digits, high double digits on draft round. You don't improve your team and you stay right there. They have to, anybody on that roster that has trade value that is over the age of 26 years old, they should be shopping, every single one of them. And they should finish the season with the 2 wins that they've got.
Whew. We don't use that word, but I know where you're going there with that. A lot of Raider fans would be very disappointed to see Max Crosby go.
Sure.
I will say from that standpoint, and we can bring Griffin in here too, because I introduced all of us, but I got to introduce Griffin too behind the scenes. Did all the tough work, really put this together here for us to be on air. But Griffin mentioned that it's hard because Tom Brady was so good, and will he be able to, you know, work with these players and expect a pretty, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? But, you know, expectations, will they be too high? But you have to think, I mean, he really made the players around him the best they could be. So if he could have that stance. Griffin, are you still in that same area that you're thinking with Tom Brady?
I think that it's going to be a problem of him being able to balance the life of a minority owner of an NFL team and an NFL broadcaster. There's a lot of issues with that, a lot of things that, you know, as part of a broadcasting team, you're supposed to do and expected to do, like meetings and everything else leading up to the game that you're covering. As an owner, that's going to be pretty hard for Tom Brady to be able to be in those rooms, in those meetings. I guess I see where Mark Davis is coming from by this, by, you know, saying, oh, we're getting Tom Brady. He's going to help us. He's going to help us pick out good quarterbacks. He's going to get us, he's going to implement a winning culture. But then again, you got to keep in mind, man, he's an NFL legend. And NFL legends, they have a problem with understanding everybody else in the world is not like them. They don't understand that you got to be able to balance, you got to be able to balance everything when it comes to being a broadcaster or an owner. And I just, it's going to be interesting to see how he does it.
Well, you just brought up a whole nether topic, right? And how Tom Brady's move will affect his Fox broadcasting. And the stipulations make it very tough for him to do his job well and to cover football games. And we know from the media standpoint and all the prep it takes to cover a football game and getting the insight and having things to talk about throughout that game. And now he's signed off on that, right? That he can't do what all the other broadcasters do. So, Justin, I just want to ask you, is there, like, is this a weird situation that could cause some trouble later on down the road?
I mean, I think that's a positive for the Raiders that he was willing to do that. I think that that's an indicator that he wants to be involved and that Mark Davis is willing for him to be involved. So I see that as a positive. I don't frankly think he's so great on broadcasting that we're going to really miss out on anything. I don't think he has to interview the players. I mean, he's recent enough that he knows these players. He knows these personalities. I don't think his broadcasting is going to suffer any. I think he's been slowly getting better. I thought week one was pretty rough, but I thought this last week he did pretty good. You know, maybe a couple of years from now where he doesn't know the players and he's never met them and he's never been on the field with any of them, he would struggle in that way. But I think in the short term, I don't think it's a problem from the broadcasting, and I think it's a positive from the Raiders' perspective.
I think it's the most important aspect to me, right? Because the ownership has changed when it was passed down from Al to Mark. It's completely different. Having those voices in the room, to me, is the most important thing. He can't be there for everything, right? He can't be there in the production meetings with the players and coaches. He can't be in another team's facility, and he can't watch the practices. I do believe that that is an important aspect as being a minority owner, but I don't think that it is the aspect. I think that his voice and the presence of him, I guess just having his name a part of the organization, is truly what's important. And honestly, it probably gives a lot of players hope at the end of the day. Like, how cool is it to have Tom Brady, someone that all of you guys grew up watching, and he's the inspiration for so many young kids, be in this building, no matter whether it's a conflict with the broadcasting job or not. I think the voice is the most important thing.
If I read this correctly, Mark Davis did say that he will have a voice in picking the next quarterback. Is that true? And how does that make the current quarterbacks feel right now, Justin?
I think this is a GM issue, right? I mean, can he help in luring a quarterback to the team that otherwise maybe wouldn't be willing to go there? I think he's probably still got that kind of juice. I mean, he played so long that, like, some of the younger kids that are coming up now probably never saw his real heyday. So I don't know that he has the same impact on the younger players. But those quarterbacks who are right in the prime of their career, he probably has, I would imagine, some sway over it. And I'm not the biggest Tom Brady fan, but one of the things that I do think permeates through his career is he seemed to have a really good grasp of leadership skills. I have to imagine that can translate over to what he's going to do here, if he's going to do anything. I mean, just because they tell the public he's going to have a say, you know, the real question is, if he's telling you to do something that you don't want to do you end up doing it, or do you stick with what your gut is? And frankly speaking, whoever's making the decisions for the Raiders and what their gut has said, I just don't think they've made very good decisions across the board. I don't think at GM. I don't think at head coach. I don't think at the selections of quarterbacks. Even if you want to go with Davante Adams and the news that came out yesterday, the way in which they rolled that out, I think, minimized the trade value that they were going to be able to get out there rather than, sort of keeping it all in-house, keeping it quiet, and they lost that ability. So, time will tell whether or not he has an impact. But if he does have a say, I can't imagine it being the Raiders being worse off for it.
Absolutely. And I like that you brought up the leadership. That's where I was kind of going in that direction with Julian Edelman and Gronk. And you saw the best out of the guys around him. So hopefully that does translate from this position. And we see that with the Raiders. Let's move to the Dallas Cowboys and this crazy story about the radio host and his job threatened by Jerry Jones. Did you guys hear about this and read into this?
Oh, my gosh. It's like, you know what? I kind of feel this is maybe bad, but whatever. You guys gave me 2 hours today, so I'm gonna say some controversial stuff. I was of the opinion early on this year, in politics, that our leaders can we have some leaders that aren't over the age of 80 and trying to censor everybody. That was kind of like this broad take, and I feel as soon as this came out, I felt the exact same way of like, this is a person who thinks that they can control their imagery, that he constantly wants to be into the news cycle, just like political figures do, constantly wants to be in the news cycle, but now believes because he's been in the news cycle for decades that he gets to dictate the manner in which he is perceived and reported on and questioned, and it's gross. And I don't even know if there are such things as Jerry Jones fans, but if there are such people that exist as Jerry Jones fans, hopefully they look at this and go, all right, man, like, time to move on. Like, he's a bad GM. Maybe he would be a good owner with a good GM. He seems to care about winning. He doesn't seem to hold back money and is trying to improve the roster and improve facilities and do all of that. But I was sort of sickened by his comments. Sickened that he thinks he owns that station in some way and owns that radio host in some way. You guys are in the radio industry. I'm not, so I can only imagine how you feel about it.
I think he sounds like a spoiled billionaire, yeah, is what he did. And for you to come out and say that you pay them is what struck me, right? Because as a radio person, it is your job to challenge questions of the people that is on your show. So he came in completely wrong with the way that he responded to that, and then had the nerve to say that fans are allowed to question you, but the radio host is not allowed to question you. Like, it, at a sense, have a certain level of respect, right? Although you're a billionaire owner, you're always in the news, right? You liked to be talked about, right? And people are always commenting and challenging, giving you those challenging questions. But when someone of what he probably thinks is of a lower employment challenges you, you felt like it was a sense of disrespect. That was my problem with this entire thing, because it's like, people were saying, oh, maybe the radio host's job, his job can be in conflict because of that. In reality, this probably is a really good situation that turns out for that radio host, because now your name is out there more, your ratings are going to go up, right? Because he wanted to act a fool on your show.
Oh, the hypocrisy there is just crazy, right? Anytime somebody's not performing on the Cowboys, from coaching and staff on down through the players, he's got no problem, airing that out publicly and saying what he thinks. And this, the question wasn't hard. It was a softball.
Exactly.
It gave him every opportunity to explain his answer and frame the question even. But let's say even if it was a critical question, he thinks he's allowed to be critical publicly of everybody else, but not be criticized himself. And I hope that the sort of media takes, you know, joins together in this and either comes at him hard or ignores him. The worst thing you could do to Jerry Jones is not give him a mic. And all of a sudden you don't give him a mic, see what happens. You know, I think they have to stand up for their brotherhood here and back this host.
I think he's going to be ignored. He's always ignored. It's been constant of you in the news. The question that he asked you is, what could you have done in the offseason? You could have signed or at least, right, the Derrick Henrys of when we know that's the position that you guys needed help in, right? You guys had problems with the CeeDee Lamb contract situation and took forever for that with the Dak Prescott. Now you got to pay Michael Parsons. So it's just so much with that. And because he's questioning you, you didn't have a rebuttal or a comeback for that. It's like, I'm honestly so tired of hearing about the Cowboys. And it frustrated me because after that 47-9 home loss to the Lions, why did we hear more about the Cowboys than we did the Lions? Let's talk more about the Lions. Let's talk about how their star defensive end is now out with an injury. So what do? They go and they go and sign more players. They have this
maybe
coach
Max Crosby.
Everyone says that would be okay. I could see that. And you know what? If we want to change the subject a little bit, I do believe that Max Crosby deserves better because he puts his all in a team and he continues to go out there and perform. Even coming off an injury, I wasn't happy that he's been playing because you're still injured. There's no way that you're completely healed. I do think he would be a great fit with the Lions, but as a Raiders fan, I just can't say that because he's literally our only sense of hope. But I want to talk more about the teams that are actually performing, and let's stop talking about what's called in parentheses America's team when it's not America's team no more. We're tired of hearing about the Cowboys and how much they suck and the problems in regards to their ownership. I'm tired.
Who's America's team?
I'm tired of it.
Who's America's team?
Right now, America's team is the Chiefs. Yeah. I hate to see that. Right?
Yeah,
that's the team that we all want to see lose. Lions is the team. I do. Lions is the team that can compete against the Chiefs.
Yep, I agree with you. Well, now, I mean, maybe not now. I mean, I have to believe if you're the Lions, you're calling the Raiders. You have to. It's like GM malpractice not to be calling the Raiders because, like you said, they're their only hope. And I would say, as a Raiders critic, hope for what? For 7 wins?
Right.
8 wins? They're not going to the playoffs. And they're probably not going to the playoffs next year. And so you got to look towards the future and get rid of the assets you have now.
Justin brings up an interesting point. We're going to dive into that in just a little bit. We're going to take a short break. And we got basketball talk on the other side. This is Cofield and Company.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Here we go. We are back. This is Cofield and Company. Alex Nye and Justin here with you on this Wednesday. Maybe Steve went up to Oregon State to get ready for the UNLV football game a little bit early, but we are happy to be with you. If you are listening in your car driving, we appreciate you. If you are listening on the app, we appreciate you as well. Really good NFL talk. I like you two kind of going back and forth there with the Raiders talk, but let's get into some basketball because there was a very big preseason NBA game here in Las Vegas because there are constant big events here now, the sports capital of the world as well as entertainment capital of the world. Golden State and the Lakers. Golden State did end up winning that one 111-97, but Nye, the crowd went wild when Bronny was finally put into the game in the fourth quarter.
You know, I was actually really happy because this kid has gotten so much pushback, and I understand why, right? I understand you do not have the talent that everybody desires for you to have, right? He comes in fourth quarter with 9 minutes left. He misses the first three shots. He ended the game with like 2 points, but it was still the fact that people were still cheering for him. And people are getting upset. He might not even have a spot on this specific roster. He might be playing with the G League. I mean, there is definitely still more to come. But I'm sure it was a great moment for LeBron. As Lakers fans, we didn't really do anything in the offseason anyway. It was nice to see Dalton Kennett. I think he's been doing pretty well. So at this point, we're just going to take what we can get. We signed LeBron to a 2-year, $100 million contract. Do I still think he's capable of things? Yes, I do. But do I think it needed to be that high? I didn't. Look, I have my opinions and my thoughts, and I can go on a rampage in regards to the Lakers. But overall, it was nice to see Bronny come out because people did want to see him. And I wish that he would have scored in the first couple shots, but hey, it's not a perfect world. he brushes the haters off his shoulders really well, and I think it's really hard. It's hard to play in the NBA as a whole.
I'm out on this whole thing. This is a LeBron James production. It's a novella. This does not exist out of like organic. You know, this didn't happen as a result of the natural state of things. This isn't Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. playing baseball on the same team at the same time. That happened organically. Nobody manufactured that. I think that people still look back at that moment, you know, and think it was cool. And I don't think history is going to look back at, you know, this whole first time in the NBA of a son and and the parent playing. Like, no, stop all of that. You know, I can have some compassion for the kid, for the position he's being put in, but that doesn't mean I need to participate and entertain this whole thing, this whole saga. It's manufactured garbage that's got nothing to do with sort of what's best for the team, what's best for the league. It has to do with what LeBron James wants to see and do. And so
the Lakers haven't done anything of what's best for the team. Haven't. They truly haven't. As a pure follower, some can argue whether or not J.J. Redick was a great fit to even be a head coach.
Yep.
Time will tell. But it's another instance of the Raiders. You got AP and J.J. Redick. Come on now. You know what I mean? So it's just like, I'm curious to see how the season is going to turn out. It does suck because us as Raider fans, we've had a lot of winning seasons. And even myself got to experience going to a Laker parade in California with my family, dressed up and geared up. That's great. I don't think that's going to happen for a very long time. The West is extremely stacked and they're coming with heat. And these younger players are more athletic and more skilled and they're coming up. And LeBron and AD are two best players. If you really want to be honest, really AD.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's been absolutely killing it. So, I do agree.
Nye has seen the light.
I do agree.
To admit the Raiders and Lakers are poor-run organizations. Mark it down. Put a tab on it. We now know.
Hey, I know how to admit the truth. And being in this position as a person who, I'm new to radio, I'm new to being a journalist, but I'm learning to take my biases and emotions out of it because I really got to see it from the overall opinion and perspective. The Raiders, I know, is not a good run organization. I get that. The Lakers, come on now, they're really not really good ran either. There's a problem in the Lakers ownership as well. It honestly starts from the bottom and goes to the top. Once you see that the head organization, all the bosses at the top are really not proactive in signing and giving their opinions when it comes to things that they actually need to give their opinions and meddle too much. Some GMs meddle too much. We'll see. I mean, I agree.
Alex, are you in on this? You in on the Bronny James storyline?
Well, I think the bigger story is about J.J. Redick, and I am interested to see how he does in that role because we know he was a great analyst and a very good basketball player himself, but I'm curious to see how he does as the head coach here. But this Bronny thing is kind of taking everything away from that, so we'll see. But you've nailed it. I mean, it is forced, and they should have let him try to work his way up to that point, but I don't know. Still a long way to go. And they haven't played in a regular season game yet, so that'll be a whole nother thing that will get our attention and we will be talking about as well. So are you guys in with this? So Boogie Cousins said the Lakers are not a serious contender anymore after drafting Bronny James. And I think now you did admit that you do think that is true.
I don't think the Lakers are serious contenders because they haven't signed anyone worth signing. I don't think it's because of Bronny James. There was really no one else to pick at that position. People can say or compare the other players that were drafted after, but it's like, I think Dalton Kennett was a good first pick that we had. But after that, like, really, who could you have picked? I don't think this was a great draft just in general. So I don't think just Bronny James himself is the alternative factor on whether or not it's going to be a good team or a good playoff team or et cetera. I think the Lakers as a whole have problems, have holes, offensively and defensively.
I mean, there's probably like 50 players that could have been selected before Bronny James, but none of them would have made this roster a contender. I'll give you that. Like, they are more than a second-round draft pick away from being a contender. I don't think they're a serious contender. And, you know, like I said, the West is stacked, and they're not slowing down. These teams aren't slowing down. And, you know, to draw parallels, let's bring it over to, like, hockey. You know, the season started, and, you know, my wife and my kids go with me to some of the games, and my wife and my kids are so upset that ever since we got rid of Fleury. And I'm like, I'm so happy that I finally get to cheer for an organization that puts winning first. And it's not about what you did in the past, and it's not about what the fans want. It's about what they know they need to do in order to win. And they've done it. And I feel like both the common thread here, what I'm bringing it back to, is both the Lakers and the Raiders have done things based on fan pressure, mm-hmm. or what they think other people want them to do, or what they owe people for past performances or past, you know, allegiances and loyalties. And that puts them in a position where you're going to have some rough years. And I think this is the beginning of some very rough years for the Lakers.
That is such a good point. I mean, that is what you need to do when you are running a team and you want to be a championship caliber team. And you see it across every sport. You see them making these moves. And it was, I mean, if you listen to LeBron James's post-game interview, it's pretty concerning when they asked him, were you guys prepared for AD not to be in the game? Like, how did you adjust to that defensively? And he's like, well, we practiced with him all week, so it was pretty hard without him. It's like, okay, next man up, who do we have?
They have no one to take his place.
Yeah.
No. They have no one to help him out. So you're going to wear and tear him down when we all know he's always hurt.
Yeah.
I'm like,
it's going to be the Lakers thing to do, right? This is like a Raiders thing to do. They're going to play him throughout a regular season in a season in which they're not serious contenders. They're going to wear him down. And then next year, he's going to be even more of a worn down injury risk mm-hmm. for the next season. This is what bad organizations do.
Skill players got to step up.
Yeah.
Bench got to step up. Everybody has to step up and everybody has to do their job. But there's only so much talking that I can do before I sound like a broken record. Like, I'm very excited because I love basketball, but am I excited for the Lakers season? I'm not. Like, none of my family is. My dad is the die-hardest Laker fan there is. And we're just like, my dad's like, I don't even care to watch preseason. And I've been watching it because I just enjoy it and I want to see what they're working with. But it's like, you have fans who are tired. It seems like the fans are smarter than the ownership sometimes. I really hate to say that, but it truly seems in some of these organizations, yeah. like the Cowboys and what we're going to talk about next, the Detroit Pistons, like fans are smarter than the ownership sometimes. Like, why do we know what we assume what we know is better for the team, but they always end up making these poor decisions.
We will get to that, and we will talk about WNBA because I am excited about that basketball. We have a game 3 coming up in about an hour and a half between the Lynx and the Liberty. But first, we're going to give out some concert tickets. Griffin, is that right?
Absolutely. So anybody listening, let's go ahead and make it caller 7. Text line 702-364-1100 for a chance to win 2 tickets to go see Sam Hunt live in concert October 25th. Through the 26th at the Fountain Blue, Las Vegas. Caller 7 right now. Call in and get a chance to win these 2 tickets.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas.
Okay, so as soon as you hear the news... What's that? Well, well, well! Hey! Good to see you, Tay. Good to see you, man. Congrats.
What's up, fellas? Hey, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Man.
Welcome back, everybody. Cofield and Company on a Wednesday. Alex, Nye, and Justin here with you. And Griffin, of course. He is always behind the scenes for every Cofield and Company episode you are listening to. Griffin, what was that audio we were just listening to?
That was our boy, Aaron Rodgers, his appearance on the Pat McAfee show. Literally yesterday, right after the news broke that Devontae had been traded to the New York Jets from the Las Vegas Raiders. He just so happened to be on right in the same room as Aaron Rodgers during his morning appearances with McAfee in what I assume is his home in New York. So he wasted no time after the trade getting out of Vegas and going back to his buddy.
That's right, and the Jets were played on Monday Night Football while he was on a flight on his way there. So, Justin, let's start with you first. Is this tampering?
I mean, if this is tampering, then I got to imagine that Devontae Adams has been the most tampered with player, right? He comes to Vegas because of Derek Carr. He goes to the Jets because of Aaron Rodgers. I don't think that there is anything in any of the rules that talk about players talking to players. So, you know, if he's talking to Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Rodgers is talking to the Jets and just saying, like, hey, he'll sign if you bring him here, then you start getting a little close. You know, then I think you start getting a little close. You can't use the player as, you know, an extended agent and do some sort of tampering that way. But I have to think that, you know, you could be much more subtle about that within the organization. Like, hey, we're thinking about going and getting Tay. What do you think about that? And he's like, I think that would be a really good idea. I don't think there's any problem with that.
Right. It did remind me a lot of the video that first, if you remember, when Devontae Adams came from Green Bay to Vegas. And I believe it, like, Derek Carr picked him up from the airport. And we saw that first video of him getting here to Vegas. And now he goes back to his former quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. So, Nye, what'd you think of this trade?
He can't wait to get out of Vegas. Like, hit the road, Jack. He's out of here. He already has the green cleats. He's ready to go. He's already there with Aaron Rodgers literally less than 24 hours after the news breaks. Like, he was ready. He was ready to get out of there. I do agree with you, Justin. It could have been so much more subtle than that. The thing that is so frustrating about the league, like, I understand that it's a business, right? I understand sometimes loyalty is not the same with others as it can be with specific organizations. I felt like, in a sense, it made AP look bad. Because when he came out with the statement was like, if players want to make business decisions, like, then he'll have to make a decision. And it makes you think, was it really truly about maybe the Devontae Adams situation? It kind of makes you think a little deeper about that. But I do believe, like, it could have just been so much more classier. We've known that you've been wanting to leave. And I do think that you had every right to want to leave. The Raiders just can't figure it out. But the way that you did it, whether it's considered tampering or the fans think it's tampering or not, the way that you did it was disrespectful at the end of the day. And now it's kind of a slap in the face, right? He goes on to Kay Adams, and she's completely reading from a script. I don't care what anybody has to say, because if you're stuttering through your words and you can't speak through it, you're kind of acting. We as journalists know when there are planted questions, and she goes on the show, and she's pretty much, well, have you talked to Aaron Rodgers? You know what I mean? Like, and then it's like event after event. It's like a timeline of things. And then all this happens, you're already with Aaron Rodgers less in 24 hours, you're posting green cleats, you're posting things on your Instagram that are very subliminal messages that just makes the organization look bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just, like, reeked of amateurism, you know? It's like, all of a sudden he's got a hamstring injury, right? He's not playing, you got, you know, AP liking a post about him getting out of town. You've got them publicly coming out, giving their ask of a second round. You know, it's just all the things. Again, I just like to compare, because we're in the same city, is to the Golden Knights. You know, the Golden Knights were getting a lot of criticism for, you know, I'll say getting rid of or dealing players who had been with the organization for a long time to do what they thought meant to improve. But the thing you got to remember is every player who's ever gotten here has always said that organization wants to win, and they do it with class, right? Afterwards, they may say, hey, I found out on Twitter, or I found out this way. But by and large, like, the way in which they do it, and it's cutthroat. I mean, no doubt about it. It's cutthroat. But there's no leaks. There's none of this, outside of the Fleury situation with the sword in the back. That was a thing. Outside of that, I just think that this whole thing You know, AP as a first-year coach, I think, stepped in several potholes along the way. Mm-hmm. I think the organization devalued him on the trade block by allowing this to fester into the public realm. And, you know, I guess what goes around comes around, you know?
Well, let's talk about that right here. The Raiders received a 2025 conditional third-round pick in the trade. That pick could improve to a second-round selection, sources told ESPN's Adam Scheffler. If Devontae Adams is a first or second team All-Pro this season or on the Jets' active roster for the AFC Championship game or Super Bowl. So you don't think that was enough for Devontae Adams?
So it's a third-round pick. Neither of those things are going to happen. It's a third-round pick. So, I'm not saying that there were better offers out there. There may not have been better offers out there, but we'll never know because you stack the deck against yourself to ensure that everybody knew you didn't have strong leverage. There was only maybe two teams in it 2 weeks ago. Then Derek Carr gets hurt. So now maybe there's only one team in it. And that was pretty public knowledge. And so rather than take care of this, the moment you knew he was a problem before you made him go public about it.
Right.
Maybe you could have got something done.
Well, Devontae Adams to the Jets, Amari Cooper is now a Buffalo Bill, but we'll get to that in a minute. On the other side of this break, Caleb Herring will join us here on Cofield & Company.
Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Excited to bring Caleb Herring in with us here on Cofield & Company. You can catch him later, too, on the Barry Odom Show at Flamingo and 215. That is at Parkway Tavern. Some really good deals there going on, too, from 6 to 7, $2 Miller Lights during the show, $5 shots and drafts, $6 cocktails. So all the good specials. Get over to Parkway Tavern, Barry Odom Show at Flamingo and 215. Caleb, how are you doing? And what'd you think about that bounce back spot for the UNLV Rebels going to Utah State?
Oh, man, I'm feeling good. I feel good about the bounce back. I feel good about the way the Rebels came out and started fast. It was one of their fastest starts of the season. You take that in Fresno State, which are the two conference opponents that they had, and they performed well, at least in the first half. Obviously, things kind of tailored off in the second half at Utah State, but getting another road win, another conference win, was really good after a loss. This team has shown some maturity in that regard as far as bouncing back. A lot can be learned about your team after they lose, after they face some adversity. It's all been pretty much sunshine and roses for UNLV this year. Coming off the loss to Syracuse, I was interested to see how the team would respond, and they did. They did not disappoint. They went up to Utah State, which is an underrated team, in my opinion. And you'll see them, I think, accumulate some more wins down the stretch in the season, in conference especially. But it was good. It was good to see the boys bounce back and get back in the winning column with another one, a tough one, coming up against Oregon State, technically a non-conference opponent, but the scheduling contract with Oregon State. So get some momentum going into that one, up on the road again.
Oh, Caleb, my man, let's talk Oregon State, UNLV. Could have been a conference game if you guys had taken the deal. It could have been a future conference game. But, I saw UNLV open up at 5-point favorites on the road. I jumped right on that, took UNLV. The lines moved to 7. I'm interested to see your take. I mean, obviously, Oregon State, and I was there, had a debacle of a game defensively. If that team shows up against UNLV, we're going to be looking at like Fresno State numbers offensively for UNLV. And I don't know what Oregon State will be able to do offensively against a UNLV defense, which is clearly better than Nevada. What's your thoughts on the game, and what do you think the keys are?
I think this game could go one of two ways. I think it could potentially be a lower scoring game that we've seen from UNLV, just because of the stylistic nature of Oregon State, who also looks to run the ball. So I think this could be a fast game in terms of the clock will just be running and some extended possessions by both teams if it goes that way. But I do see the potential for a runaway for UNLV, and I say that because if they get off to a fast start, the Rebels in this case. We saw an example last week of what happens when Oregon State is forced to get off of their game plan. And by that, I mean where everything is based off the run, multi-tight end sets, play action pass if you must. But the run is the real driver of the offense for Oregon State. I think we saw last week what can happen when they get off that schedule. And because the game was tight down the stretch, because Reno kept scoring, they had to put the ball in the air. And unfortunately for them, that meant a lot of turnovers. Their passing efficiency isn't great. They don't pass the ball for a lot of touchdowns. I think their running back has 12 touchdowns on the year. That just tells you kind of what they want to do. And I don't think they want to be a team that airs it out, which bodes well for UNLV, because I don't think over the past couple of weeks UNLV has been good against teams that air it out and spread with tempo and things like that. So Oregon State is very much not that team. And I think we'll see UNLV get back to some physical dominance at the line of scrimmage if that turns up into game plan. So it can go one of two ways. I think it can be a slow, low-scoring affair, and by low, I mean under 30 for both teams. And then it could also turn into a big-time lopsided win for UNLV, in my opinion. But it's going to be a tough place to play. Corvallis at night, it's always a hostile environment. Coming home after loss, we see how they respond. There's a lot to this game for both teams. I think Oregon State is flirting with the brink of a slip in the season if they don't come away with the win. So they may have an edge of desperation here, but I think it's a favorable matchup for UNLV on both sides of the ball based on what I've seen so far from the Beavers.
I think you nailed it, Caleb, as you always do. The one, I think, wild card I'll put it on into all this is last week in the Reno game, 17 players on Oregon State's two deep were out with injuries. So I think, and most of those are on the defensive side of the ball. So depending on how many, four of their starting corners were out. So depending on where they get health-wise, and I don't think there's any indication that that's going to improve this week. I tend to agree with you. Now, the funny thing about that Reno game is both clubs were running the ball. Neither defense was stopping it, so it became a high-scoring affair, even though both clubs were running the ball. You think it would be a time-of-possession sort of grinder, but they were getting 8 or 9 yards every carry, both teams, and so the score just shot up. But I totally agree with you. If Oregon State's put in a position where you know they have to throw, that is not the game plan they want to be playing. So, I'm going to be up there. I'm going to be interested in watching it. I do think that Oregon State does play different in Corvallis, so I do have a glimmer of hope that enough so that, the kids will be wearing Oregon State stuff instead of UNLV stuff and support the dad's alma mater instead of their hometown. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see. It should be a fun one. I do think that last week's game against Reno may be a little bit of fool's gold for teams that maybe haven't watched Oregon State. I think this is a good football team, and I think Reno was able to take advantage of some of that, the injuries, and I don't think they played a characteristic game of Oregon State. So I don't necessarily believe that, 9 times out of 10 that Reno beat Oregon State. I think that game probably should go Oregon State's ways, but that's the funny thing about football. You got to play each week and play it honest, and I try to roll the ball out there, so we'll see.
Caleb, we've got about 30 seconds here. Can you give us a preview on what you'll talk about with Barry Odom on the Barry Odom Show tonight?
As usual, we'll get candid with him about some of the things that he learned about his team in the win, even though there are some good things. There obviously will be some negatives. His thoughts about the success on the road that UNLV has had. They've been a pretty good road team since he's been in Vegas, a pretty good road team this year and last. So we'll talk about that a little bit, maybe get some updates on some injuries and his thoughts on some of the rule changes that have come down in college football, and obviously a big one with the Dan Lanning incident up in Oregon. So we'll see how the ever-evolving landscape of college football continues to change and how he's planning to adjust to it as a head coach.
Caleb, we appreciate you. You can find him here every Wednesday on Cofield & Company, and you can also find him on the Barry Odom Show tonight at Parkway Tavern at Flamingo and 215. For Nay and Justin and myself, Alex White, we will be right back in 30 seconds. Don't go anywhere. This is Cofield & Company.